You're listening to the Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
Carolina is a Berkman Fellow. She is the coordinator of the Industrial Cooperation Project. She is an expert in international copyright. She knows an amazing amount of stuff. And she's going to be talking. And the way these things generally work is we try to keep the talks relatively brief and then lots of time for discussion.
So thank you, everybody, to be here in this beautiful summer day here in Boston. And I just want to thank you, Hi, to be here with us today, and also to the Berkman Center of having sponsored and supported this research for almost 2 years now. So no further delay, let's go ahead. I just want to give you a brief background on the research, and later I'm going to jump into. It's a huge research which resulted in a huge wiki and many publications. But I'm just going to mention that later, and the presentation is going to be a much more broader review and a framework that we have been developing to frame everything that we achieved with this research. So the World Health Networks that many of you may have read began the task of looking at various verticals that have a major impact in development. So you high look at educational materials, biological innovation, software, and things like that. And found on them some arrangements that he called common base models. I will not define them much here, but Yohai is here so he can do that task later. The study began partially by taking this approach that started with the World Networks and mapping a little deeper some new verticals. And in addition, we tried to search in those verticals some common base practices that were emerging or not, and if they were emerging or not. That was actually our next slides, the foundational questions that came into mind when we were thinking about this project. So how and if are components of the industrial structure changing, and how they deal with and manage knowledge embedded products and goods in different industries. So if you think about peer production, we are trying to, and people collaborating, we are trying to see if industries are moving towards that direction and how. And so how industries, how these actors, and all the actors within our industrial sector are incorporating common base strategies. And for that, of course, it's crucial to understand to what extent and how intellectual property system affects the cooperation in these different sectors and how it interferes in what we call knowledge governance in those sectors. To do that, we divided the products into three types of products: data, text, and tools. And about data, we mean any type of data, so raw data, genetic data, and things like that. Text, we mean papers, patents, the publications, and everything, and tools and their composites. So one of the sectors we study was alternative energy. So a wind tower at the end is a composite of many tools into a final product, just for you to understand like why we did that. So we were trying to understand how the actors in many of the sectors were dealing and were treating these knowledge embedded products. So the agenda for now is I'm going to present you some of the results, the relevance of the research methodology, a little bit of overview of the sectors, and the main conclusions I achieved. But I think that one of the important things that actually you can take away from here, if you want to take something away from here, is exactly this. The nature of knowledge embedded products has an impact on the emergency of common base production. So I think this is crucial for us to understand why these cooperation arrangements emerged in some sectors and not in others. And even when we try to foster openness in many sectors, if that is the right way to go or if that works or not.
And the relevance is exactly if you care about the emergency of common-based arrangements or any type of knowledge governance system which allows broader access to knowledge, in some sectors you may have to have some kind of intervention in that market. And by intervention, I want to use the term intervention in a broad sense. Governmental intervention, industry behavior intervention, non-profit intervention, each policy intervention, any kind of thing that acts on that market to change how actors deal with knowledge and share knowledge in that market. And by sharing knowledge, I not just mean like sharing more knowledge. I mean that term in both positive sharing more knowledge or negative like sharing less knowledge in terms of like vectors. The research methodology we used was like a well-known case studies in standardized observational across sectors. We did a lot of literature review, and that's going to be available in the wiki. So if you want to research a certain sector, you already have all that summarized for you. So we did a huge literature review with the help of the research assistants that are here now and some others that could not be here. So I think it's a really amazing resource for anybody that wants to start understanding what's happening in those sectors in terms of how innovation happens, what is the effect of IP, what are the policies involved. So all that is in that platform, which is going to be open in the fall. We try to represent conceptually and visually the relevant attributes of those players, and I'm going to show you some graphics later. We identify whether industry practice have shifted towards more or less cooperative arrangements over time. And the main outputs of all that is exactly what I've mentioned already. So we have synthesis and papers and essays coming out of that. And we also have the ICP Wiki itself, because rather than pursue like a more traditional path of collection data and keep that all in my, like in our drawers, we decided to put everything public and really document the whole research process through this wiki, which actually gave us a monstrous wiki that we are now shaping to be more user-friendly. Okay, I just mentioned that. So here, for example, is the homepage of the wiki, which explains a little bit. That's going to change over time. This is another page where we bring a lot of the papers on alternative energy, genomics, diagnostic kits, educational materials, and telecommunications, which was a research associate that did for us last semester. And one section that we are building now is what I call the parking lot. So there are many interesting questions that came about in that research and many things that we could not pursue in more detail that we are still think it's like interesting. So this, we're going to put this everything here in this parking lot. So people, if you want ideas for your research or even for PhDs, because there is so much thing to do here, everything is going to be in this parking lot. Yes, later. Verticals. You guys already have, actually, already sent to the fellows list. But I can give you one. So verticals. The main verticals we study was were biotechnology, alternative energy, and educational materials. Within biotechnology, we did genomics and diagnostic kits. So a set of products that are up in the value chain, which is very data-driven, and another set of products like diagnostic tests that are much later, much downstream the value chain, that are products that need to be manufactured and things like that. And that's another interesting observation that we did, is that depending on how much manufacturing you have involved, harder you find common-based approach. So even if we think about examples has threadless, which is that example of a lot of people designing t-shirts and things like that, while you have a lot of cooperation happening in the design area, you don't have that happening in the manufacture area. So that's another impact. So, and all that comes from the nature of the product, in my personal opinion. Well, alternative energy. So this is just a picture of the wiki, how it looks. And I just want to show you later this, because you're going to have the access to the wiki, how it works. So we have basic definitions explaining which market we focus, because of course in each vertical there are a lot of focus to have. Essays, paper, and background research and resources for publication. So under the study of the field, we develop like a huge set of questions that we try to answer through literature review. So it's really kind of gets you by hand and helps to navigate you through that sector. And it's a lot of raw notes, actually, that the papers are the publications that are going to come from that, they say, but these are really raw research notes. Alternative energy. We focus on wind, solar, and sea. And why we did that? Because they present different levels of maturity. So we try to understand if the level of maturity of a certain technology also impacts on how people share or not. And there is a very nice example from Denmark that we're going to bring here later. We started the study in the US, but we soon understood that was a more international-driven study was necessary, exactly to compare policies, and even because of the issue of climate change, how countries are choosing to move towards alternative energy, and what is the place that move towards alternative energy is having in the climate change discussions and things like that. So it's a really geopolitical importance of that. We decided to move internationally. We didn't find central evidence of common base production in that sector. And it may be exactly because it's a much more patent-driven sector than a copyright-driven sector. There is a high level of patenting, and that level is increasing. So we did analysis and studies of level of patenting in many countries, so China, US, Brazil, Spain, Denmark, Holland. So the main countries that are considered the top countries in those areas. We present all the patenting activity, all the policy activity, and we try to relate a little bit how policy impacted in patent. That's all in the wiki. We have complicated manufacturer systems in that. We have a great level of concentration. We have a lot of startups, but at the same time, GE end up buying all those startups. So we see that concentration. And we have a complicated knowledge governance process based on tech transfer and based on university companies, relationships, and things like that. So this is like the very, very, very broad, high level that you can see in that sector. But at the same time, we see some other interesting things. So literature reviews that there is no proof of blockage from patents. But we still don't know if that's true or not. It's very funny because if you see the authors that come from the discussion of access to medicines, those authors say, no, there may be problem. And the rest of the world say, no, there is no problem. So you see a lot of a great political debate, which I think is very spiced by ideology in this field emerging, but there is no data-driven research that shows if there is blockage or not. I have a suspicion here that actually is because just right now patents are really increasing, because just right now there is so much public money available and VC money available that companies are going back and paying attention on technology and increasing patenting, and we see traditional actors such as oil companies investing in biotechnology here, for example, algae for energy and things like that. So we see the birth of many new industries and many new paths of innovation in that industry. So I think it's really interesting sector to keep observing and see what's going to happen with time and how that knowledge coming from these innovations and these new technologies will be shared and will be assessed. Another important thing here is that at the international level, there's a lot of cooperation agreements being formed between countries, because you just don't need the technology. You really need the know-how to use the technology in your country. And if you don't have the cooperation to share that know-how, it's really hard to just implement the technology in your country. So we are seeing a lot of in the Bonn meeting that was just happening last week, and in the Copenhagen meeting, a lot of efforts of technology transfer. So all that just to see that there is no proof now, but maybe in the future we're gonna have issues on that. Survey indicates traditional knowledge products governance. So we did a survey with the EFRCs, which are the Electronic Frontier Research Centers. So there is a paper coming out of that. We sent a survey monkey with like 54 questions to them about how they treat the knowledge. And to simplify, the answer was, we're just gonna do papers and patents. Some of them, I say, look, I don't even need to answer your questionnaire because I'm just gonna try to publish papers and look for all the patents I can here, and that's my mandate from the university. So there is no incentive of broader collaboration. What we see now is that the government is trying to push for knowledge sharing among those centers, but that's really, nobody knows how to do it. Because the academics involved, they don't have any incentives for that. The incentives really comes from papers and patents. And I was in a discussion in the White House, and they were actually trying to change those sets of incentives, but they still don't know what to do about that. One of the efforts, actually, they are trying to do to change a little bit that reality, but is really new, is the idea of prizes and clusters. So if you see the value chain of innovation on that sector, the EFRCs are very upstream in the value chain. The prizes are in the middle of their value chain, exactly to take the technology from the value of death, as they call. That's that space between university and companies that nobody knows what to do with the technology. And clusters in the later in the value chain. So they are putting companies and universities and startups in a certain city, so they try to change knowledge much more and even create informal channels of knowledge sharing as we have here in Boston and in California and things like that. But sharing is happening in what I call pre-product spaces. So those pre-products means like it's not crucial information for you to generate a technology, but maybe important information to take business decisions or actually to improve a little bit the design of that technology and things like that, or to install better or to set better a wind farm and things like that. So the government just launched the Open AI to share smart grid data in a manner consistent with the US .gov system. So it's a really much more about transparency and how the government invests money on that and where are the policies than anything else. US Open Labs, which they are trying to do based on the idea of the Bell Labs, and the database set, state of incentives for renewable energy, which is a database of policies. So there was a lot of uncertainty where to invest, how to invest, where to set a company, because there was a cost on understanding the policies across the US. So they set this database to make that information transparent. And we also see some small movements of emergency of communities of using the spirit of do it yourself. We didn't went down that road, so we cannot say if they are creating new products, but it really seems if you read through that, they are just saying, okay, how to organize a solar panel with PET bottles and things like that. So it's just really how you do in your backyard, how you replicate in your backyard the technology that already exists. And we have the case of Denmark that I'm going to talk a little bit later. So this is the OpenAI, Open Energy Info. And they have information on incentives, open labs, international clean. It's just a really huge wiki that they every day they are dumping a lot of information there to be a hub of information around that area, around this area in the US. Educational materials was another vertical that we study. So that here is the main page for that. We divided the study in K-12 and higher education levels because the forces and the actors and the problems of those markets are, of those levels are different and they reflect different in how this happens. And different from alternative energy, we see significant evidence of common base production, which is the open educational resource movement that many of you know. And this movement exists almost 10 years now, so we have a lot of cases, connections. We have open business emerging there, it has flatword knowledge and things like that. And this movement is in a point now that they are really trying to find ways to be sustainable, because philanthropic money is kind of finishing by now. So they are really in that time on what do we do with that now. And so they are pushing for government support and things like that. Incumbents and startups exploring new open or closed models. So you see some open business models such as self-publishing, advertising-based models, printing on demand models, including public domain. So you have all these books open because they are already in public domain, but they charge for printing on demand and things like that. And this is all documented in the wiki with all the names of the companies and all the links and everything. Closed, you see some, so in the opposite of this movement toward openness, we also have the closed area, where you see big companies, big incumbents such as Pearson and others, locking clients with services and seeing content as a commodity. So I bring some notes from my interview, me and Erhard, we did with the strategy, the head of strategy at Pearson, and which was very interesting, actually. And of course, we see publishers suing users and institutions and problems of access due to price. So here, the problem of access is still central. So you have the pressure from schools trying to innovate and share knowledge through this new methodology that the OER movement comes, and also students are pressuring because of the price problem. To support this toward openness movement, we see that Obama wants to invest in OER. However, they don't have money anymore. They didn't put in the budget, and I was a couple of, like a month ago, with Hal Plotkin in a meeting, and he was saying that they are trying to find money from everywhere, but the government said they would put 500 million, and they don't have that money. So they were trying actually to get from act that supports capacity, like professional training, and even from that act, there is no money anymore. So I don't know when Obama is going to be able to start supporting and giving that financial support to these initiatives. And me and Erhard, we wrote an essay on that some time ago. It's in the Publius portal. But a good news is that a perceived huge barrier has fallen. So the textbook adoption process now accepts open textbooks. And that is a huge, huge, huge change in that market, because it was exactly the adoption process that blocked all transformation from like this OER stuff that were in the peripheral area of the educational market to become mainstream models. And as you know, the California and Texas, they are, and Florida, they are among the biggest buyers. So everything they say they want gonna become the main textbooks that every school adopts around the U.S. So the fact that they now adopt open textbooks is huge for the transformation of this industry. And what about the rest of the world? We are just seeing around like a lot of governmental interventions, for example, Brazil, to rethink public policy around public investments around the idea that every public investment done in educational material should be public access, as it happened in open access here in the US. But we also have the towards closeness side of this coin, and here I just bring some notes from the interview with Bill. So what they are doing is they are seeing content as a commodity, but they are trying to connect for-profit model. They are trying to rethink the model of educational material as a model of education. So the end product now is not anymore like the unity of a textbook or exam or the teacher's test book support material and things like that. It's actually a new education model which they will actually give you assessment systems and exams models and everything that a teacher or a school needs to foster education in that. We also see that happening in the high level with Elsevier and other models, building platforms over the content. So it's really, I think, similar to what happened in software, where you have the code open, but service added value service are building on top of that, that are being built on top of that. And we asked him, so the last question that we did him when he was with here at Berkman, so content, copyright's not more important for you, but then he left and he didn't want to answer that question for us. So everything is going to be hooked there through technology and service. And at the end, biotechnology, which we did the genomics area and also the diagnostic kits area. In that area, I think what's very interesting that we did a case law review, a literature review, a country reports review, and a U.S. regulation review. The country reports is a summary of country reports from Australia, Europe, and U.S. There is a lot of task forces nowadays in these regions really trying to understand if patents represent a problem here in terms of access to that. If you are following, we just had the Myriad case. We have the Myriad case now under discussion. The last decision was that the patent was not valid because for that judge from New York, genomic information is not subject matter for patents, and that's a huge change in patent law. But a lot of analysts, they doubt that that's going to keep it's going to be the decision of the Superior Court on that topic. And this is also all mapped there. So in biotech, we see a mixture of common base production and more traditional close practice, depending on the point of the value chain you are. In genomics, if you see the data area, what I was saying is we have the Human Genome Project, which was a governmental intervention. We have the HapMap, and those are walking down the value chain towards annotation models and things like that. So that area is pretty open. But that area is what we call big science. So the project, the commons in GenSec also sparked emerging commons in production. Okay. And we see that most of these big science that are genomic or databases, they are result of government investment in university and output, and their outputs, data and text, they are already open towards because of mandate. So we have the NIH mandate, and we also have the Bermuda rule saying that every new sequence you have, you should deposit in the public domain in 24 hours, and you have to public that information in a peer review publication after 6 months and things like that. So you already have norms governing that knowledge area and establishing that very in a very stable form. But at the same time, we don't see that in the research tools. So by research tools, I mean the mice or everything you need to do research on this area. So mice, plasmid, like all the glue and things like you need that. But one thing that's emerging in that area, which is really, really recent from like 2 years until now, is the Personal Genome Project here at the Harvard Medical School, and also the efforts of some private foundations investing in disease-specific research, so neurologic diseases and some rare diseases that they are trying to share all the knowledge their grantees find to see if they really find cures for diseases that are all in the brain, so they are probably connected at some point So it's really like a knowledge governance of this community of the grantees, and everything is going to be put in the public domain soon. But we don't see that in the rest of the value chain of biotech. You see a lot of translational research, which actually comes for a startup, and they are really just looking for patents, because just through patents, the VCs can value the company and give the investment. So you see how the investment cycle in those companies really impact on the knowledge governance in those sectors. And you have some what people call open source drug discovery that you see in India, for example. But if you really go and investigate that, you're going to see that they are just sharing basic data, and not, they are not like developing together a certain drug. So again, it's really on the copyright side and not on the final manufactured product, which is based on a patent. And a little bit on diagnostics. So diagnostics is, I consider, an end product, which is very resistant to common-based effects. We are still in the middle of the discussion if patents are a problem or not, but much of our conclusions comes that the fact that not just patent, but also the regulatory process that determines that just some laboratories can perform those tests is what really causing problems in the market and problems in regard to access and price to that diagnostic kit. So even if Myriad, even if the ACLU, which is the Association of Consumers, that sued Myriad in that case, win at the Superior Court, we still gonna see a huge problem of what the insurance, the health insurance U.S. pays, so Medicare and Medicaid, what they which laboratories they authorize to perform the diagnostic and things like that. So it's not just patents; it's really like a regulatory issue in that market that's creating access barriers. So, as a summary of everything we saw until now, in biotech sector, we see a well-developed variability in practice with some of the most proprietary alongside with the most open and collaborative efforts. Alternative energy, the practices are less well-developed. There is no real common-based practice there in the main product, as I was saying. But there is substantial and interest support from Obama administration to embrace innovation sharing practices. So we see that in smart grid, the information that's coming from smart grid, the information that's coming from wind measurements around the country through the OpenAI platform and things like that. And educational materials is an intermediate in the development of common-based practice, continuing large and historically powerful incumbents and cultural barriers, because it's not just sustainability issues that OER is facing, it's also acceptance issues and incentive issues and other issues. And as I told you, I think a lot of, if you want to see some common-based or more positive sharing knowledge practices happening, we need a series of interventions. And I'm not here to prescribe what those interventions are, but just to show a little bit in like maps formats what we saw that happens. So this was an exercise we did in the beginning of project, trying to understand what's changing in that market. So I don't know if you can see here, this quadrant was exactly to represent common base practice. So you have this arrow here, which is about participation, how many can join and if it's easy to join, and how many can participate and if it's easy for those to participate, and here how they can participate and what are the barriers to enter on that. So this is representing foundational data in biotech, which is genomic information. So the Human Genome Project is foundational data. So you have a series of initiatives here. You have companies leaving the market after the intervention that came from the government with the Human Genome Project. But you also have the expansion of common-based practice, which we classified as the INTRES, HapMap, and SNP, which is a series of databases that are open for anybody to see, to join, and to contribute. which the government hosts in the NCBI, which is a major hub of database there. So it's just a little bit like the representation of all that moving that we see. So we see the intervention of new business models, public investment in public results, and also demand. So these are little types of intervention we saw that. Another type of governmental intervention is in the area of test books, that you see new business models and demand pressure, as I was saying before, intervening in that market. And you see the expansion of OER here and the traditional incumbents, Martin, Miffin, Pearson, etc., going towards a closer direction. And they are facing pressure such as user test books, copies, core specs, technology demand, etc. So this is a little a visual representation of everything I've been telling you until now. And one thing that's interesting here when we compare, when we have in the back of our minds what happened with the music industry, is to see that different from the music industry, these incumbents here, they are really aware of what's happening and they are already experimenting with open. But that doesn't mean that they are not moving towards closeness. So the core strategy is moving toward closeness, but they are aware and moving. So you see a lot of experimenting, such as the Blue Mary Academics, the Flatword Knowledge, which actually was a spin-off of Pearson, and things like that, experimenting with the openness. And finally, intervention that I called industry behavior, which was the case of the Denmark offshore industry, which is for me is really interesting because they needed to prove to their government that that industry was a viable industry. And that made sense for the government and to invest on the development of that industry. But they just were able to do so, and because of that, the patent activity in that country is very low in wind offshore, because they really said, look, we need to collaborate here to share knowledge, and if an actor was about to patent something, he would be discriminalized from that community of innovators. So it's really a community pressure to share knowledge and to not patent, to prove to the government that that was an industry that is interesting for that country to have among their priorities. And that just happened because you need to have a knowledge economy. So communities spanning across organization borders, where knowledge is continuously embedded in practice. So everything was around work teams and not companies. So you have like many people from many different companies working together and finding solutions for those problems and not patenting the solution. Need for solving specific problems and needing for testing new concepts which could be too risky to test it alone. So you needed to have that, the recognition of those issues, to be able to make those industry cooperate. That, however, didn't happen anywhere else. So Denmark, it's true that Denmark is one of the most innovative countries in wind offshore, but we didn't see that happening everywhere else. So as conclusions, I just want to kind of bring back some issues that we talked before. Common-based production is easily found with copyrighted-based industries such as software and educational materials. Industries with more complex manufacturing and distribution requirements have higher resistance to common-based practices. But even complex manufacturing knowledge embedded products have cycles inside them. You can find some common-based. So while diagnostic kits resist to common-based, the genomic that gave origin to that is still open to this type of arrangement. And exactly because of that, in those verticals that are more resistant, what we probably should be looking for are models for diffusion, for knowledge diffusion rather than the common base issues. So access to scientific process, access to know-how, more flexible tech transfer experiments. So this is a early conclusion, something that I've been thinking recently. So this is just the takeaway again to remind you about what I think is really important here. And it's that. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Hi, Colin, Berkman. Thank you, guys, my research assistants. And
what was most surprising in the results of your research?
I think was really to see one thing that actually we've been discussing in some fellows hours is that openness may not be the answer for everything for every sector. And I think this really shaped the policy decisions we take in some verticals and what we should be paying attention. And that was actually what I've been thinking in that last slide, that maybe access to the knowledge that inform a certain sector and more flexible tech transfer issues and would be more important right now than fight for openness everywhere. So that's a little bit what was kind of surprising.
The team-oriented approach that you talked about in the Denmark's offshore industry, I'm just trying to visualize that. Does that mean that the team that's brought together are from, let's say, some of the team members are from universities, some of them are from technology companies, for instance? I mean, how is the team constructed that's not company affiliated?
Yeah.
And
no,
what
no,
do you think the best approach is to
what
that?
I understood from the literature review we did there was just literature review. We didn't like interview anybody. It was really that they found a problem. They tried to check what industries, what companies would have any relation with that product problem. So, for example, a huge problem for wind offshore is the cement you use to hook the tower in the sea, and sometimes, so who has knowledge around improving the cement? So they would pick those employees from a diversity of companies and put together, and until they solve the problem, and until like the cement was stable. So that was the kind of thing they did. It was really problem driven. I don't know that. No, I don't know that. But I can give you the references for
okay.
that. Yeah, yeah.
I'll ask a question that will demonstrate how little I understand about all this. But that when Paul Romer talks about economic growth, he talks about recipes and the ability to share recipes around. And it seems that a lot of this is the openness in recipes and the development of recipes. And when you say that the copyright-based industries have relatively more openness or have more common-based production than the others, I guess that when I first saw it, I thought, that's odd, why is it? And then it occurs that maybe the whole copyright industry is all documented already, and the recipe is there, and that's what you share. Is that a good analogy? And is one of the issues here that there are some aspects of peer-based production or just any kind of innovation in production that are easier to document and share than others? And one of the big obstacles here is just writing out the recipe. It's kind of the whole how to operate an organization that could be potentially another frontier there, but there's nobody knows how to write it down or to share it in the same way.
Yeah. So one thing that I think is not just because it's copyright, is also because that product tends to be more digital or easily transform into something that's digital. So that helps a lot. And copyright also different from patents or the knowledge around patents. You can do reverse engineering. So you can really kind of experiment with that and build around that. That doesn't mean that you will not get sued, but it's much more, the products are much more flexible to that interference from anybody. While in patents, you may be right that even if you have the patent document, you have so much know-how on making that work, and there is so much criticism from the literature, which is not what we covered, but that comes from the fact that what is in the patent document is, even if it passes the enablement requirement, really doesn't enable you to do something. So maybe, I don't know if I understood your question correctly, but...
Not the same thing. Is that what you mean by perhaps more attention should be paid in knowledge diffusion rather than innovation? That the tools are out there, the recipes are out there in a sense, but people aren't able to find ways to adopt them. They don't have the...
Yeah, that's something that I've been kind of brainstorming around, you know, that because knowledge diffusion is part of innovation anyway, but
Could you perhaps draw the parallel between what you've said regarding the education publishing, when you said that content becomes a commodity and therefore you have to sell services? Could there be a parallel with the music industry, where the actual songs have become a commodity and therefore you're going to make money by selling services around something that has become essentially free?
Well, I...
apt or not, yeah. Could you transfer that?
What services do you have in mind for music industry?
So in other words, that not even a music label, but perhaps somebody like Verizon will say, music is free, but if you want to have it free, you'll have to pay, I don't know, dollars for everything else that comes around it. Fast downloads, whatever else.
I don't know. It seems for me that the music at the end is exactly what you need. You know, you don't need any services to enjoy your music better. You may need better devices to have the music sounding better, but I see a easier parallel in software, because you have like the customization and you have everything else you can do to make that software works better for a certain client. And because of that, I see that happening in test books, because it's actually not that difficult to find authors for test books nowadays. And even if they are not in the main academic institutions, they are good authors. So we actually see amazing examples coming from the OER, from a piano teacher that wrote a book because she was not happy with anything, and that book was adopted worldwide, including formally by schools in US. And the same thing like a Indian father that didn't like the physics books of their kids, so he wrote a book, and that was actually also adopted in the US formally, and things like that. But I don't know if that's the parallel. The parallel I was doing here was exactly the change in the market here, and the perception that the educational material companies are understanding better the changes and how they need to change that the music industry did, because suddenly they had Apple, which was not a traditional music company, coming into that market and changing the dynamic in the market. So.
I guess I have a kind of methodological question, but when you look at commons-based production, I mean, you can see that there's like a website out there that people are contributing to, but how do you measure the sort of impact of that in terms of the development of the industry relative to like the social networks that people have, the connections people have, the training that they have, the financial resources they have available, all the other things? So how do you kind of measure how impactful these sort of commons knowledge bases are relative to other standards?
Because at the end we didn't, because I think you are talking more about peer production, online communities and things like that, so we didn't face the problem, I think, in the same way. We really went through the road that are they sharing knowledge, and how you can see that affecting, for example, how much patenting is happening, if there are access issues that can show a little bit that is a more proprietary sector. So it's not the same framework. What we did here, for example, has the online cooperation project is doing, and as I see the cooperation seminar group is doing. So it was a little different methodological approach there. It was really to see as, okay, if there is something that's important to be, if there is a technology that that we consider it's important to be diffusing to society, for example, alternative energy to mitigate climate change, is that happening and how and why, and if not, why is not, and what are the interventions to make that happening? So this is something very interesting that everybody's debating climate change, but the industry is not moving towards sharing models to combat climate change. So that's, you know.
This is kind of an odd question, but pardon the oddity. Is this something that could come on Google, like a Google platform, and or even kind of a Facebook kind of, I don't know, just in terms of the way people share the information, like finding interesting ways
to share that diffusion. That's happening a little. That was also not a little bit, not the focus of that, but there is a lot of people talking what we call how companies are absorbing Web 2.0 technologies. So we have Pfizer with the Pfizer Wiki, which is actually an internal wiki, which I personally consider like a knowledge management system, you know. So they are trying to actually express a lot of tacit knowledge that is there among their employees. We actually have another fellow here that his focus is completely, and he just launched a book on like how. So is that the sense where you're thinking like how? Yeah, it's open within the company, but it's closed for outside. We also see
Almost like IM quality to it.
Yeah.
Like very live almost.
So I think the OpenAI is a little bit in that direction. That's mm-hmm. the intention. But I also see that happening in the user communities of do your it yourself. But I see some engineers from companies because they identify themselves. But I think there is still a problem of companies observing that communities and seeing if any innovation is really coming from that or not. So it's actually a problem that Eric von Hippel points that how companies should be hearing more the customers and people that appropriate that technology and try to replicate in their backyard. So
I have two questions. First, what does it mean to share? Like, is it just people coming together and talking and being like, this is really cool, or you should do this? Or is it actually like contracting parties saying like, I will buy this knowledge from you? So to actually hear like what sharing actually means like in these different sectoral contexts would be a little bit helpful. And then second, I'm understanding like, I want to understand better, like why would people want to share versus say buy this knowledge from each other? And like what are the costs and consequences associated with each? On the margin, when does it make sense to cooperate versus say compete or buy these things?
Yeah. I think actually buy is also a way of sharing. So when we were talking about knowledge governance, I think it includes any type of model on how you access that knowledge and how you share that knowledge. So if you think about universities, they have many ways of sharing that knowledge through publications or conference or workshop or professors consulting to firms or tech transfer through their tech transfer offices. So they are all ways of knowledge sharing in that sense. So it is, we are adopting like in a broad format, and because we try to do that experiment with the quadrant to see, okay, what is more open in terms of include at the extreme anybody, and what's more closed, including just those contractually engaged parts. So just because of that, we are trying to actually find some type of gradient among those types of knowledge sharing schemes.
Could you repeat the question?
compare Brazil and US around OER.
I mean, here.
Okay, I asked them to compare the Brazilian government intervention to regarding open education to what the US government, how the US government approaches it.
Okay, good. So that was, I give you some commission later. That was not a planned question, but it's very good. I coordinate like how we are project in Brazil, exactly fostering policy there. And on June 24, I'm going to be giving a testimonial to the Congress exactly on that. So it's very exciting moment. So what's happening there is that different from US, the government, the federal government buys all the textbooks for the public schools network. And we are just kind of starting to debate how the government makes that purchase. And the government buy the unities, and we are pushing that the government should buy also the IP in relation to that and make that content open for a series of reasons, including training the professionals, training the teachers, and things like that. In US, what the government is doing, actually, they are trying to put money towards building materials to train the teachers. So it's a very specific attitude. But it's also interesting to observe that Obama hired many, many leaders from the open educational resources community in US to have high level, like to be at the Secretary of Education and things like that, like supporting Obama in those. But different from Brazil, there is no policy being pushed here in regard to what we call public access to public materials, to educational materials, exactly because the government, the federal government is not the main buyer. In Brazil it is. So it's really up to the states. So we see that changing in California and Texas actually asking for more open, but not just thinking that actually that's going to be a good step towards paying less for educational materials. So that's a thing they are debating right now. I don't know if that's the issue. The main difference is that, you know, there is much more a federal-driven policy, and here is much a more state-driven policy, and Obama can do so far, you know, to intervene on that. We have just in the wiki the map of all policies affecting that movement in the US also available. So we're gonna, we have that.
I wonder if you could talk just a little bit about the ways that people working in OER are adjusting what they do to try to create more sustainable business models.
Yeah, so we see actually a lot of models going towards what we call publishing on demand. So even connections which, okay, let's step back. The majority of the big projects in the US, they are university-based. So the salaries and things like that part come from the university. So MIT OpenCourseWare, all the OpenCourseWare consortium follows that base. But many universities are cutting that budget. Actually, it's one of the first budget they are cutting. So they go to philanthropic support, which has been supporting this movement for 10 years, Hewlett Foundation mainly. But that also is ending soon. So I think what they are really trying to do now is finding some type of business models around that. So the publishing on demand is one. Flat Word Knowledge for me is like an amazing example. They get really like the most famous textbook authors in the US, and they're gonna pay actually higher royalties to them because they sell many types of publishing published textbooks. So you have access to the open and free textbook online, but you can buy like iPod version, iPad version, mobile version, something just for you to learn while you are bicycling. And so they sell a lot of tangible goods, you know, from that. And with that, they are able to pay higher royalties. So that's more sustainable royalties. And they are also developing models of actually paying the second and the third author. So if you come and you change the book because it's open license, you can change the book. And your changes adopted, they're going to also pay you royalties. So they are just implementing this model this year. So it's a really, for me, it's one of the most beautiful and amazing models coming out of that. But there is a lot of sustainability issues, you know, exactly because the money from foundations is kind of ending. And Hewlett announced recently that they're going to focus in California, so. Okay.
Long term. So you've looked at three industries with different, seeing different mixes of commons based production in them. Long term, what's the outlook for those three or overall? Is this pretty much where it is? Is something going to change dramatically where things are? Or?
Well, I see that in educational materials, we really gonna see kind of this split in the market that I was pointing. You know, like a lot of openness, experimentation, but the incumbents, their core business model is still towards becoming a service industry and not a product-based industry. So that I think is a interesting change to observe and. How they actually gonna deal with copyright and if they're gonna keep suing students and things like that, if they're gonna transit to this more service-based industry thing. In the biotech, I'm not really sure. You know, I think we see we are already there because we already have these mandates towards openness, but the patenting and the VC, the structure of the VC in those areas in biotech and also in alternative energy so dictates how the market works that I don't see a lot of changes there. You know, we may see some changes in some silos such as neglected diseases and neglected tropical diseases and heart diseases and like, but that's not the whole market. That's very like small silos within the market, exactly because they are realizing that if they don't cooperate, they don't find the cures for those, and there is not huge market interest in on those cures and things like that. Let's see. I hope they actually share more in alternative energy if the target's really mitigation of climate change, but I don't see that really happening in practice. I see that on the international debates, but actually the industries are being very are reflecting a lot of that discourse. So we saw recently the formation of an industry organization called IDEA. So I was with some Brazilian diplomats discussing the compulsory license issue, and just when there was this announcement that Brazil was thinking about doing some compulsory licensing in alternative energy technology, there was this launch of IDEA and the industry saying that that's bad for jobs and that will not work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If there is a lot of misinformation there that the industry passed along to the public. But I think we're going to see more like a political debate emerging in that discussion around access and intellectual property on that technology. And let's see if some bilateral agreements happen to help there. So Brazil and Germany are negotiating a cooperation agreement to do some tech transfer and know-how transfer and training transfer. So there is a lot of education around that. So that may be helpful. But again, that's not common base. It's really like more flexible forms of tech transfer and licensing.
That was a huge amount of information and really nicely summarized. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.